You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Good afternoon. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Well, what's going on in the world of astronomy today? I think they're talking about worms on Mars. They're going to plant worms or grow worms to see if they can live on Mars, something like that. So we're in the world of astronomy with all these powerful things and distant black holes and galaxies and all these explosions and rockets and spacecrafts, and NASA's talking about worms on Mars. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And what else are we going to talk about? Okay, we're going to talk about actually worms in space. So also, I listened to my other broadcast, and I was trying to say something the other day about water. Well, didn't come out very well, so I'm going to take a minute. I hope I don't ruin it or make it even worse, but I'm going to take a minute to talk a little bit about water. There are moons on the solar system, like Enceladus in the Saturn system, and then there's, I think, Europa, and they have subsurface oceans. Scientists believe that these subsurface oceans below layers of ice have more water than Earth, possibly. And these are smaller. These moons are smaller than the Earth. So water is going to be a requirement for life, life as we know it, at least. So they are talking about water sometimes. And, of course, we need water. There's five different kinds of ice. Sometimes ice can be very hard. And it's like rock, so that's one of the types of ice. But let me try to kind of repair what I said before. Well, I said it okay, but not as well as I could have. Okay, if you look at the periodic table of elements, there's a table called the electronegativity of atoms. So what is this electronegativity? It's a number that measures how much an atom wants in electron. So, for example, oxygen, it's electronegativity is 3.7. Hydrogen, its electronegativity is 2.1. So there's a difference of electronegativity of 1.6. So oxygen wants the electron more. So when H2O is in a compound, then the electrons will move more towards the oxygen because the oxygen wants these electrons more. So on one end of the water molecule, on the oxygen side, there'll be a minus charge. And on the hydrogen side, there'll be a plus charge, a net plus charge. So it's like a dipole. It's like one end it's a negative, other end it's a positive. So this is the reason that water, when it's in a liquid, the O of one oxygen doesn't bond, but it makes an attraction with the H of another H2O. So they're pretty tight. It's called hydrogen bonding, even though it's not bond. It's a force. It's electronic. It's a force between two electric charges. So that's why water freezes at a much higher point than scientists believe it should. So what would happen to Earth if water did freeze at minus 50 or minus 100 degrees Celsius instead of freezing at zero? Our Earth would look different, wouldn't it? So there's a lot of billions and billions, almost infinite number of things that when the universe was formed, certain things happened that if they didn't happen, we wouldn't have our universe we have today and we wouldn't be alive. So there's all these wonderful little things. I hope to go into it once, water, because water is a very interesting thing. So what happens when you open your eyeglass case and your eyeglass is not in there? So that's just what happened to me. Okay, so let's start by talking about worms in space. This is on www.nasa.gov. It's an article. I don't know the date. It just say worms in space. So they eat bacteria and live in your backyard. They live 2 to 3 weeks and they have bodily systems just like human. What are they? Elegans, of course. C. elegans. That's what you call a worm. And they are the stars of the latest voyage of the Soyuz spacecraft to the International Space Station. Image to right, there's an ice mission. There's a little image, an ice mission, the first international Canor habitus elegans experiment consists of several that will investigate the effects of spacecraft on C. elegans, which are worms, and to develop links to human physiology. So it's a nice little symbol of a worm in a spacesuit, and it's in outer space. So we got worms in outer space now. So I'm going to get back to the article. This small soil-dwelling bacteria-eaten unsegment worm may be an important key in mankind's endeavor to explore space. Historically, the study of simple multicellular model organisms has provided crucial understanding of biological processes, ultimately leading to better understanding of human biology. The goal of the flight is to use the nematode worm, or Caenorhabditis elegans, as a model organism for space flight biology. I wonder what they're going to do to these worms. Okay. C. elegans is a common, well-studied organism used in biomedical research as a model for human development, genetics, aging, and disease. The recent award of a Nobel Prize in Medicine to three pioneering worm researchers has demonstrated the value that's been placed on the worm as a model system by the scientific and medical communities. So C. elegans is a primitive, free-living, non-parasitic organism that shares many biological characteristics found in human biology. The worm is conceived as a single cell that undergoes a complex process of development, starting with embryonic cleavage, proceeding through morphogenesis and growth to the adult. It has a nervous system with a brain, maybe bigger than ours, and muscles and a gut. It exhibits behavior and is capable of rudimentary learning. It produces sperm and eggs and reproduces, although normally as a hermaphrodite. After reproduction, the worm gradually ages, loses vigor, and finally dies. C. elegans can be grown in either liquid culture or on solid substrate. All 959 somatic cells of its transparent body are visible with a microscope, and its average lifespan is a mere 2 to 3 weeks. Thus, C. elegans provides the researcher with an ideal compromise between complexity and tractability. ICE FIRST is an international collaboration with participants from France, Canada, Japan, and the United States. Yay, Canada is studying worms in space. Results from the NASA Space Flight Experiment will provide an environment, notably radiation and microgravity influence, to look at the worm development through the life cycle, the expression of known and novel genes by performing full genome microarray analysis, and worm muscle physiology. So, for the NASA component of ICE FIRST, worms will be grown in a chemically defined liquid, actinic culture medium referred to as C. elegans maintenance media, or CEMM, so SEM. Worms will be cultured in several collapsible gas permeable bags for the 10-day sortie flight to the International Space Station. The culture conditions and the requirements for worm growth are well established from ground studies. The life cycle from egg to egg of worms in the media takes approximately 7 days, and it's dependent upon the temperature. Worm cultures will be maintained on an orbit at a consistent 20 degrees Celsius. For this experiment, live worm cultures will be returned to Earth. Immediately upon return, the movement of worms will be recorded using a microscope video system. The specimens will then be analyzed for gene expression, larval development, and muscle anatomy. So I guess they want to see how worms grow in a system of microgravity and where there's radiation. The hardware that we'll use, the experiment will be performed using hardware from the European Space Agency. The worm cultures grown in several collapsible gas permeable bags will be placed in type 1 experimental containers, EC1. For the experiment, the worms need to breathe air from the launch vehicle and the International Space Station environment. A series of ventilation holes in their housing provides air exchange to the inside of the container. The vent holes will be covered with a Gore-Tex membrane to maintain an additional level of liquid contaminant. The experimental containers will be placed in an incubator, maintaining the samples at 20 degrees Celsius. Cubic is a transportable incubator to use for biological experiment processing. It is derived from former Aquarius incubators previously used on Soyuz to International Space Station flights. two units, Topaz and Amber, will be launched in the Soyuz spacecraft and subsequently traveled and used in the Russian segment of the International Space Station. Kubrick Amber is equipped with a centrifuge insert, providing on-orbit 1G control, and Kubrick Topaz is equipped with a passive insert used solely for microgravity experiments. So it looks as if they're just going to let the worms be and see how the worms respond in microgravity. So is that all? Is that the big fuss? Just put the worms in space and see how they survive, see how it affects. Maybe that makes sense because the experiment is to see how worms, which have a similar anatomy, so to speak, than humans, how we're going to study how the space environment affects them, and maybe we can learn how it'll affect humans when humans go into outer space. So these worms live for 2 or 3 weeks. So we can see in for their 2 week stay in space, that is equivalent to a much longer. It's like us staying in space for much longer. So from these few weeks in space, we can see how microgravity and radiation affects the worm's anatomy or biology. Okay, so what I was going to do, I wanted to read about black holes, but then I'm doing a show today on things that are in our solar system. So I'm going to stick to our solar system. So I'll be right back after this message. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
All Access Pass is back for season 2. We are a collectively run weekly program that discusses equity, inclusion, and accessibility issues on and off UBC's campus, including both visible and invisible disabilities. You can catch All Access Pass every Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Anyone can get involved. No experience is necessary. People of all abilities are welcome to join. Check us out on Facebook at All Access Pass or get involved by emailing accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
That's it. Pack it up.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
Sarah, one of our old cohorts. So anyway, we were talking about worms in space. So I guess worms have a short lifespan, 2 or 3 weeks. So when they send worms in space, they're going to see how the microgravity environment and how maybe radiation affects them. So we can learn from what happens to the worms, what could happen to humans. So now we're going to do an orbital dance. As I said, I wanted to do something called Found, a Most Distant Black Hole. Scientists have found a black hole that is 800 million times the mass of our sun, which is astonishingly large for its age. And it grew farther than we expected, only 690 million years after the Big Bang. So it's about like 13 billion light years away, close to 13. So I wanted to do that, but today my show is on worms in space. So I'm going to keep it to the solar system, and I could do that most distant black hole maybe next week. So here I got an article dated November 30th, 2017, and it says an orbital dance may help preserve oceans and icy worlds. I guess I know what it's going to be about already. In icy worlds in our outer solar system, where it's like minus 200 degrees outside, maybe in the sun even, water is going to freeze. So these subsurface oceans that are on Enceladus and Europa, they need something to keep them heated up. So when these moons go around their planets, there's tidal forces, there's the gravitational forces that provides the heat to keep the oceans warm or below or above freezing. Is that what happens? Let's see. I'm going to read this article, as I said. An orbital dance may help preserve oceans on icy worlds. And here goes the article. Heat generated by the gravitational pulls of moons formed from massive collisions could extend the lifetimes of liquid water oceans beneath the surface of large icy worlds in our outer solar system, according to new NASA research. This greatly expands the number of locations where extraterrestrial life might be found, since liquid water is necessary to support known forms of life, and astronomers estimate there are dozens of these worlds. Dozens, okay. So here's a composite. There's a photo that says, composite enhanced color image of Pluto, lower right, and its largest moon, Charon, upper left, taken by NASA's New Horizons spacecraft on July 14, 2015. Pluto and Charon are shown with approximately correct relative sizes, but their separation is not to scale. Okay, so I'm going to get back to the article. Now, here's a quote from somebody called Prabal Saxena of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, and it's a lead author of the research published in Icarus on November 24th. Here's the quote. These objects need to be considered as potential reservoirs of water and life. I lost my place. Okay, if our study is correct, we may now have more places in our solar system that possess some of the critical elements of extraterrestrial life. End quote. These frigid worlds are found beyond the orbit of Neptune and include Pluto and its moon. They are known as trans-Neptunian objects, or TNOs, and are far too cold to have liquid water on their surfaces, where temperatures are less than 350 degrees below Fahrenheit, so below minus 200 degrees Celsius. However, there is evidence that some may have layers of liquid water beneath the icy crust. Beneath their icy crust. In addition to bulk densities that are similar to other bodies suspected to have subsurface oceans, an analysis of a light reflected from some TNOs reveals signatures of crystalline water ice and ammonia hydrates. At the extremely low surface temperature on these objects, water ice takes a disordered, amorphous form instead of the regularly ordered crystals typical in warmer areas such as snowflakes on Earth. Also, space radiation converts crystalline water ice to the amorphous form and breaks down ammonia hydrates, so they are not expected to survive long on TNO surfaces. This suggests that both compounds may have come from an interior liquid water layer that erupted to the surface, a process known as cryovolcanism. So, there's a composite image here of Wright Mons, one of two potential cryovolcanoes spotted on the surface of Pluto by the New Horizons spacecraft. This is amazing, beautiful pictures. Okay, so back to the article. Most of the long-lived heat inside trans-Neptunian objects, or TNOs, and you know what? I think my time is coming to an end, so I'll finish this sentence. Comes from the decay of radioactive elements that were incorporated as these objects formed. The heat can be enough to melt a layer of the icy crust, generating a subsurface ocean, and perhaps maintain it for billions of years. Well, thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to Space Astro Talk. Next up is our sports guys. So you have a good weekend. And I'm going to LA over the Christmas holidays. So hopefully I can get some interviews with astronomers down there. Thank you. Have a pleasant weekend.